It's a News Buzz edition of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. This week, President Obama awarded the Medal of Honor to former Army Sergeant Kyle J. White, an Afghanistan war veteran.
More than 6 years later, you can still see the images and hear the sounds of that battle. And if you look closely at that man in the suit on his way to work, you'll notice the piece of war that he carries with him tucked under his shirt sleeve, a stainless steel bracelet around his wrist etched with the names of his six fallen comrades who will always be with him. Kyle, members of Chosen Company, you did your duty, and now it's time for America to do ours. After more than a decade of war, to welcome you home with the support and the benefits and opportunities that you've earned.
The President of the United States of America, authorized by Act of Congress, March 3, 1863, has awarded, in the name of Congress, the Medal of Honor to Specialist Kyle J. White, United States Army.
White was awarded the nation's highest military honor for action in Afghanistan's Nuristan province during a battle after an ambush that took place November 9, 2007. Joining us now, a former soldier who also took part in that battle and owes his life to the heroic actions of Sergeant White that day. Former Specialist Kane Schilling left the Army in 2008 and now works for an energy company in Palo. He joins us now by phone. Kane Schilling, welcome to our program.
Thank you.
As I understand it, on that day, let's have you recount it. You were moving along a narrow ridge with Sergeant White, 12 other U.S. troops with the 173rd Airborne Brigade, and your unit was accompanied by a contingent of Afghan soldiers. You were leaving a meeting of tribal elders. What happened moving along that ridge?
Well, we had some signs of deception early on, but once we, I think it was about half an hour into it, they ambushed us, and it was about a three-sided pronged attack. So there's a group of ACM, anti-coalition militia, in front on the side and then across the valley, up above us all, that just started an ambush.
What were they firing at you?
A lot of small arms from AK to PKMs and a lot of RPGs.
What happened when the ambush took place? What did you do?
Well, initially, there was only a couple shots fired, and then I thought, was thinking, is it towards us or what's going on? And then as soon as I got done thinking that, it was unleashed. So you didn't have much time to think about it.
What actions does your unit take when you are ambushed? What happens?
Well, normally you want to get down a good base of fire to win fire superiority, but in this ambush, there's literally no cover to get behind to even set up that base of fire.
On this ridge, you were completely exposed.
Right.
How many Taliban were attacking you?
I do not know the exact number. I don't think anyone does, but we've heard 30 to 50 to 100, but who knows.
You were injured, I think, twice during this battle. When were you first hit?
Well, actually, I was first hit in the same RPG that Kyle was hit in. It just cut my hand a little bit. And then shortly after that, I was shot in my shoulder. And then shortly after Marine Sergeant Box died, I was shot in my leg.
What do you remember after being injured? What action did you take? What could you do?
Shortly after I was shot in my arm, I just tried getting a tourniquet on it. And as soon as I started doing that, I realized Kyle run through more fire to come and help me. And he gets the tourniquet on my arm and stops the bleeding.
So he's running from where to where, exposing himself to fire. What is he doing?
He was about 10 to 15 meters away, and this was shortly after the RPG hit, so he was on the ground, and then he got up and ran about that distance to me.
How did you finally get out of there?
It was about 5 hours. Kyle called in a medevac and worked the medevac in to get out there.
So 5 hours, and this is during the night that you were waiting there wounded on this hillside.
Right.
What were your thoughts at that time?
I don't know. It's pretty dim By fall, I was starting to go in and out of consciousness.
Was Kyle White with you?
Yes, he stayed with me the entire time. He made sure I didn't fall asleep. Just a couple times he had to pat my face to keep me awake.
Do you remember what he was saying to you?
Anywhere from jokes to shut up, because sometimes I'd forget the setting we're in and be talking a little too loud. So had to keep him quiet one way or another.
Oh, so you were still thinking perhaps Taliban were around?
Yes, that's what I was forgetting. I would ask him like when the helicopters would come, but I'd be too loud. He'd have to quiet me down.
Mm-hmm. Did you think you might die on that hillside?
Yeah, there was quite a few times that I didn't think it would end well.
As you admit, Sergeant White, Kyle White, saved your life that day. How do you thank someone for risking his life to save yours?
Well, there's no way I could ever repay him. And we're really good friends, and we have been even before that. So he knows I am deeply grateful, and he knows my family is also eternally grateful for what he did that day.
Mm-hmm. Do you keep in contact with men who are in your unit who you served with?
Yep, we are still very close.
Earlier this week, you were at the White House with the president, a White House ceremony that recognized former Army Sergeant Kyle J. White with the highest military honor this country can offer. For that action in Afghanistan. What was that like?
It was overwhelming. I've been, you know, I think I wanted him to get this medal more than he wanted it. So I was extremely happy that this has come.
Why is it so important to have this story told and for all the men in the unit to be recognized, also the ones who fell on that day?
Well, the six, you know, gave their lives and the ultimate sacrifice. So I personally think it's very important for any service member that gave their lives to be recognized. And sadly, you know, there's a lot that aren't as much as others. And everyone that day sacrificed something. Everyone was wounded. So, you know, it's just really important for me.
President Obama read the names of the six servicemen who died in that battle. Let's listen to him.
When you're deployed, he later said, those people become your family. What you really care about is, I want to get this guy to the left and to the right home. This family was tested that day. Not a single one of them escaped without injury, and six brave Americans gave their lives, their last full measure of devotion, and we remember them today. Sergeant Philip A. Box, Captain Matthew C. Ferreira, Specialist Joseph M. Loncourt, Sergeant Jeffrey S. Mersman, Corporal Lester G. Roque, and Kyle's best friend, Corporal Sean K. A. Longsman. Some of their families are here today. I'd ask them to please stand so we can recognize their extraordinary sacrifice.
President Obama at the White House earlier this week during a Medal of Honor ceremony to recognize former Army Sergeant Kyle J. White. You met with relatives at the ceremony, relatives of the fallen soldiers there. Did you talk with them? And if so, what seems most important to them to hear from you as someone who was at that battle?
I did. I think what they thought the most important was just to hear the normal everyday stories about us with their son and, you know, just funny things, just to kind of let them hear of what he was like.
You're now back. You've been back for several years. You left the Army in 2008 and now work in Palo, Iowa. Help us understand what it's like to come back to life in the U.S. after combat with experiences like that. How has that experience changed you?
Well, I think I may have had it a little bit easier than most service members, just because after I was wounded, I went to Walter Reed, and they have great programs to transition. So I don't think it was very difficult for me, and the current place I work have a lot of veterans, so that makes it a lot easier.
What are your thoughts about the situation in Afghanistan today? What has been achieved after more than a decade of U.S. involvement and thousands of American casualties?
Well, not getting too much into it, on an individual level, I think our unit accomplished our missions, well, we did. And, you know, there's always room for an improvement, and we've passed the torch on to the Afghan military, and I think, you know, when I was there, they were doing a great job, and we'll continue to.
Former Specialist Kane Schilling, now working and living in Palo, Iowa, with his family. I want to thank you very much for your service and for telling us about the battle in 2007.
Yes, thank you very much for having me.
It's a NewsBuzz edition of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. This week, the Department of Veterans Affairs announced a new initiative to help student veterans succeed. The program is the first of its kind in the nation. It's called the Iowa Consortium of Veteran Excellence, goes by the acronym ICOVE, and is thanks to a partnership with the Iowa City VA Healthcare System and the University of Iowa. The program will be piloted on the University of Iowa's campus. There's an estimated 600 students identifying themselves as veterans or service members. Joining us now, Georgina Dodge, University of Iowa's Chief Diversity Officer, also a Navy veteran, and the ICOVE Principal Investigator. Georgina Dodge, thank you for your service and welcome to our program.
Thank you very much. It's great to be here.
Outline the basics of this new program for us. What will it include?
Well, we are trying to make this program as holistic as possible because we realize that there are a lot of support services that are needed by our veterans who are transitioning from the military into higher education. And so we're focusing both on services that are directed to student veterans as well as programs that are more directed towards the community and creating a space for veterans to thrive at the university.
Mm-hmm. What is the new part of this? Because we are saying this is the first of its kind in the nation, and we know for many years we've had campus programs that seek to aid veterans and in their transition. So what's new about this?
At the University of Iowa, as well as at many other universities, we've been doing a lot of fantastic programming around the needs of our returning veterans. But what we haven't done is really step back and taken a more comprehensive look at what we need to do overall. And so that's what we're doing now. And we also have an assessment piece in place. We're very fortunate. Our partners at the local VA hospital here in Iowa City, they have some fantastic research skills. And so they're going to be able to assess some of the programming we do. So, for example, we have at the university had a transition course for veterans moving from the military into higher education. We are going to revisit that course, look at the way that it's been structured. It was originally developed by a VA clinician.
Mm-hmm. Is this the course called – was originally called Life After War?
Yes, or? It was called Life After War. Now it is Life After Service because we realize – I mean, it's, you know, not a great realization, but we're focusing on the fact that not everyone is in a combat zone. People serve in a multitude of different ways, and we really need to help students make the transition from the military into higher education more effectively. And even as we redevelop that course, we're developing a textbook that will accompany the course so that we can help other institutions learn how best to assist students in making that transition.
Mm-hmm. More effectively make a transition is what your goal is here. How do we know that the transition is not going as well as we would like it to be when we look at possibly things like graduation rates, retention, and employment after school? Are we seeing veterans there not succeeding in the way that their civilian counterparts do?
Yes, we are, unfortunately. Things have gotten much better over the years. I do need to stress that. So, for example, the class of veterans at the university who came in 2003 graduated at about a 50% graduation rate. And now the class that came in 2007 their six-year graduation rate was almost 70%, which puts them on a par with other students at the university.
Mm-hmm.
So we know that the programming we're doing has been effective. We know that these intercessions are necessary. Now we just need to figure out how can we do them better. And not just us either. Our goal is really to help other institutions understand how they can make help veterans make that transition.
It sounds like in a program like this, you'll be looking for feedback from student veterans to improve and to find out why something works, why something else doesn't work.
Right. Our student veterans are such a huge part of this, and they are such a wonderful group to work with. And True Confessions, I'm actually going to be teaching the transition course for the College of Education in the fall, and I'm so looking forward to working with veterans and hearing directly from them what their needs are.
What do you hear in the candid moments that you catch veterans? You are a veteran, veteran to veteran. What do they tell you that we might not know about in a college atmosphere that is or can be problematic?
Well, I think it's important to realize that many of our veterans are also first-generation students, and so many of them face some of the same issues that first-generation students face, but it's doubled in some ways because they're coming into what could be called a foreign culture, but it's foreign on a lot of different levels. You know, they're making that transition from the structure of the military to the lovely intellectual chaos of a university can be quite challenging, and I remember for me it was overwhelming. I feel very fortunate that I was provided some guidance. I happened to stumble onto some mentors. But I think that looking at my own story, the fact that I actually started college with the intention of pursuing a degree in electrical engineering because I served as an electronics technician in the military, and yet I came out the other end with an English degree, kind of speaks to something in terms of who helped me along my journey through mm-hmm. higher education.
You said it's like transitioning from the military culture to a university culture can be like going to another country.
Yes.
So is going to another country, you often encounter a different language. Is the lingo different from the military to the classroom in the university?
Absolutely. One of the first things you learn in making that transition is that you're going to have to develop a whole new set of acronyms within higher education that are in no way similar compared to those that you become very familiar with, compared to all of the lingo that exists within the military. The very structures and the way that hierarchies work are very different. The structure of a day is also incredibly different. There's no longer a set expectation. And also, some of the skills that one needs to succeed in higher education may not necessarily be particularly strong in some of our veterans.
Like?
Some of them have been away from school for some time. Just the discipline to study. Now, we know that veterans are highly disciplined, but it's a different form of discipline. Mm-hmm. It's a discipline of action. You know, and when you take that and you put it to studying, I remember at times I would sit down and my assignment was to read something. I would feel guilty. I would feel almost as though I was being lazy or not doing something by taking the time to sit and read.
Mm. I see in this new program, ICOVE, the Iowa Consortium of Veterans, Veteran Excellence, that there's a particular focus on those with service-connected disabilities. What types of disabilities are we talking about?
Yeah, some of those disabilities will be physical disabilities, but a lot of them are associated with traumatic brain injury, TBI, as well as PTSD. And we need to help veterans work through those larger issues before they can successfully focus on a field of study.
Mm-hmm. I imagine those can be particularly difficult. You're on a campus, you can get into some crowded areas, and I know those suffering from post-traumatic stress disorder can have a real problem with being penned in the side of a classroom. I've talked with student veterans before, and they say, I am by the door. I check out a classroom when I come in, and I want to know my exit opportunities and so forth. So that's what we're talking about.
Absolutely. There are so many different things and sometimes unexpected things that can trigger some type of traumatic event that has happened.
Mm-hmm. And so I'm assuming too, and you mentioned at the outset, that it's not only support and awareness raising for the veterans, but for the community, the staff, the professors, the instructors, fellow students. Is this part of the program as well?
Absolutely.
What
and it's
is
a
it then?
Key
yeah.
part of the program. We're actually going to be developing training for faculty and staff. And here we're planning on putting together some video sessions that can also be used by other institutions. Again, we really want to share the knowledge and the assessment that we gain from the program. We're also going to work with employers. and helping them understand how best to capitalize on the strengths that veterans bring to the workforce.
Mm-hmm. What do you think is the gap there? Why aren't our veterans succeeding when they have a college diploma in getting employment? What will that awareness raising among employers then gain us? What is the awareness that's needed?
Well, I think one of the highest levels of awareness we need to aim for is to have employers stop looking at veterans as though they are somehow victims, as though they somehow bring a set of problems with them, when in fact they bring so many strengths with them. I think that there are recent events that have happened across the country that maybe have people a little bit fearful of veterans, and we need to help employers understand that that is absolutely not the norm.
Mm-hmm. It was interesting a few minutes ago when I talked with veteran Kane Schilling. He's employed at a power company in Palo. And when I asked him about his transition, he commented that he had a fairly easy transition because at this energy company, there were fellow veterans. So that's a key.
Absolutely.
And that can be replicated on a campus because, 600 at the University of Iowa alone, right?
Absolutely. And within my office, the Chief Diversity Office, our motto is building community. And that's something we focus on. And community is going to look a little bit different for each and every individual. But our goal is to help everyone find that place, to find that unit that they can belong to. And for a lot of our student veterans, it is being around other student veterans.
You are the ICOVE principal investigator. What are the burning questions you're eager to answer?
Okay, where do I start?
We've got about a minute left.
Sorry, there are so many questions. My mind is ricocheting all over the place. I think that I really want to hear from our veterans what academic skills they feel they least have that we could provide them with, as well as what type of emotional support systems that they need, but also what needs to happen to enhance their support systems outside of the classroom. And that's critical when we think about families and the roles that they play in our ultimate success. How can we help them outside of the classroom so that they can succeed within?
This is a pilot program, 2 years long.
Yes,
and
it is.
What's learned here, what's implemented here? University of Iowa is recognized as one of the best places of higher education for veterans, will be, you hope, replicated in colleges and universities across the country.
Absolutely. At the end of the pilot, the VA will take a look at our results and decide how they want to disseminate the information. We're very excited about it.
Okay.
Because this year, for the first time, U.S. News and World Report ranked schools in terms of their veteran services, and the University of Iowa ranked number 6.
Well, Georgina Dodge, University of Iowa's Chief Diversity Officer, Navy veteran, and ICOVE Principal Investigator. ICOVE standing for Iowa Consortium of Veteran Excellence. Thank you for being with us, and we will look forward to tracking your progress here in helping our student veterans.
Thank you very much.
Coming up in just a moment, we'll talk with a fifth grader from Ames who is representing Iowa in the National Geographic Bee, a tour of a new mobile museum, and find out why heritage pigs in western Iowa are being fed spent whiskey mash. That's when we return. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer.